Okay, it's my pleasure also to introduce Jeff Ravel. He holds his PhD from Berkeley. He's a professor at MIT, and he's written two important books. The first one, The Contested Parterre, Public Theater and French Political Culture, 1680 to 1791, widely used. And the second one, later, a little bit later, the would-be commoner, A Tale of Deception, Murder, and Justice in 17th Century France. Jeff.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
No, they gave me one. I've got one right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You don't need
I'm right.
Here's
good.
Okay. Is that right? Is it working?
Okay. Thank you, Jack. So here's the good news. This is the last presentation on the last panel of the conference. We're almost there. I wanted to talk in contrast to my colleagues on the panel who talked about theatricality in various sites, S-I-T-E, in France. I thought I would talk about the theater itself and sites within the theater. I'm going to show you some slides to do that. And the point I want to make is the following, that the uses of theater in the 18th century were many and multiplying throughout the century. And I think when we move the concept of theatricality or performativity or spectacularity outside the walls of the playhouse to society at large, it is a useful reminder that those categories within the walls of the playhouse are not necessarily stable either. So to get at this point, first I want to show you two images that purport to represent the expulsion of the Italian actors, the Comédie Italienne, from Paris in 1697. By Louis XIV. Here's the first one. And the reasons why are multiple and not completely understood. The vulgarity of the Italians, they were threatening to stage a play that satirized the royal mistress, Madame de Maintenon, and they wanted to save money. The king wanted to save money in the treasury, too. So the point about this image right here is the way that this royal action is represented. Here we have a magistrate, a representative of the Lieutenant General de Police, and his bill poster right here, who's putting up a sign that says, "De par le roi, your theater is closed." And out in the street, outside of the playhouse space, are the Italian actors themselves who continue to perform. They're using all their usual gestures in response to the magistrate and his posting right there. And the point about this kind of theatricality is that it is entirely circumscribed within royal theatrical privilege. The Italians had held a privilege to be the only people who could perform Italian-style commedia dell'arte in Paris, and so they're being expelled. So that's one vision of one way of representing what happened in 1697. Here's the second one. And this one, I think, is interesting to contrast to the engraving after Watteau because, well, for many reasons. First of all, this is the theater. Here's the box office right here. There's little signs right here. And here's the magistrates and their bill posters. They're all in the background. They're not really what this image is about, as opposed to the actions of the state being the primary focus of the engraving after Watteau. Instead, what is going on here is literally the actors are escaping the playhouse and invading and occupying the city. Here they are, some of them coming down out of a ladder out of the theater. And over here, sets and scenic designs are being wheeled throughout the city, taken to other places. Here they're holding a sale of their costumes and props. And so people who live in Paris are actually taking the props perhaps back to their houses, perhaps to stage theater in their own areas. We have here some elites who are strolling in the streets of Paris, and they are somewhat surprised and taken aback by a show of theatricality that, as Jim was talking about, is even more pronounced than their own. And then we have a multiplication, not just one Arlequin, but many right here, not just one Polichinelle, but many right here, multiplying throughout the city. And this right here, it's hard to read, but it says, Castigat ridendo mores. This was the motto of the Comédie Italienne they had on their the curtain that came down, which essentially meant ridicule improves morals or critiques one's mores. And So I think that what's interesting about this second image is, and I don't have dates on these things are impossible to date. I suspect this one is much later. And to my mind, it visualizes the way in which the Italian repertory, the set of actors, the Lazzi, the shticks that the Commedia Italiana did, is moving outside of the playhouse and really occupying or taking up the city. So, to continue this theme, to continue making this point, I want to show a few more images, both of theaters, let's say of stages and of pages, because I think the theater in the 18th century also should be understood as a multimedia phenomenon that is shared between performance, the encounter between actors and spectators, and publication, the encounter between the author and the reader, in both places, in both spaces, meaning is being made. So, for example, here is, at the end of the 18th century, another version of the official or the privileged stage. The Comédie Française performed in four different venues from its founding in 1680 until the Revolution. This is the last one, and of course this building still exists in Paris, the Odéon Theatre near the Senate and the Jardin du Luxembourg. And it is noticeable in these four spaces in its theater architecture for being a kind of secular temple to the theater and to the public that occupies the theater in the 18th century. And in the 1780s, there were two other buildings built for the other two privileged theaters. The Comédie Italienne had come back, the Opéra as well. But these three privileged theater spaces were very far from delineating all the spaces in which theatricality took place. This is an image from a fan that portrays society actors who are performing in private, in a private residence, for each other and in front of each other in a space that is very different than the secular temple of the Odeon that I showed you earlier. Now, it's not just the stage, of course, it's the page as well. And so here also is one of the functions of the theater is the canonization of, in this case, the Corneille and also the other 17th century major figures of the stage, Racine and Molière, and that valorization of the great men of French literature happens in both a visual sense and then also in the lush production of books. And I was trying to find a folio edition of Corneille. I couldn't find one to put up there, so this is the substitute for it. That canonization of the French stage as something that is deeply implicated in a French national cultural project is also taking place at the Comédie Française. And I wanted to put in a plug for the Comédie Française Registers project that I've been working on for a while with colleagues here in the U.S. and also in France. These are statistics from our database displayed in one of the search and visualization tools that we've created. And what you're looking at are the total receipts by decade for plays performed at the Comédie Française by Pierre Corneille. And what's interesting here is the fluctuations. It doesn't decline and, in fact, increases. There's a slight decline in 1760 again, but then receipts go up as well. And so there is a mutual reinforcement of repertory canonization and French national culture. Those are not the only uses of the printed page as well. Here is an image that's been commented on by Roger Chartier, Dina Goodman, and others, which is not even really a private theatrical performance. It's a kind of reading, but it's also a moment of leisure for these two men and these five women. It begins with the printed text that is in the very center of the image right here, being held by this man. But one imagines all sorts of reflections taking place, some of which may have to do with the reading of Molière, but others of which may have to do with various kinds of gazes and exchanges and gestures that are taking place in the exchanges between the figures right here. So this is the point that I wanted to make, is simply that when we talk about theatricality and performativity, it's a very expansive category in the 18th century. And I think applying that expansiveness to the many rich and wonderful situations that the other panelists have talked about enhances the understanding and the usefulness of performativity. Thank you.